Good morning. One of the differences that COVID-19 has made is that people are talking a lot more about politics and politicians. And I certainly wouldn't want to be a government leader these days, as it seems impossible for them to do anything right. And our Premier Kenney said that he gets lots of emails from people on both sides and is about equal. Those who say that they're doing way too much and they're upset that they're doing too much. And then you have the other crowd that's upset that they aren't doing enough. And there's a lot of conspiracy theories out there that are going around. Our people freely send our government leaders hate mail. It's tough times to be a leader. But we're a democracy. And part of being a democracy is people are free to speak their minds, whether it's good or bad or helpful. And we're free to vote and to elect our leaders. And that's supposed to be the strength of our democratic system, that we elect our leaders. But there's a great weakness in our democratic system as well. There are no standards, no qualifications for leadership. All you have to do is win a popularity vote at the polls, and you can be a leader. And so there's no experience qualifications, no education qualifications, not even any moral qualifications. And so it simply comes down often to who promises to give away the most money, and people vote for them. And so we then put these people into these positions and we expect them to administer billions of dollars, navigate complex issues, and make far-reaching decisions. Years ago, I heard someone say that they believed it'd be far better to take a mum who operates her household on a tight budget and make her prime minister, because at least she would know what a budget was. And maybe there's some truth to that. Well, that's our government and how we operate. Now, within the church, we too follow a democratic system. We get to nominate and vote for our leaders. But as we learned last week, the Bible isn't like our government. It doesn't leave us adrift concerning qualifications for whom we nominate and vote for. In fact, it gives us a very specified list of qualifications. So last week, we went through this list very quickly. We talked about the qualifications of reputation. A man is to be above reproach. He's to be respectable and dignified, well thought of by outsiders. We talked about his character. He's a man who's to be proven character in regards to his sexuality. He's to be sober-minded, self-controlled, not greedy for gain, not a drunkard, disciplined, a lover of what is good, upright, holy, not quick-tempered, not quarrelsome, not arrogant, gentle, and hospitable. And I just compiled that list from Acts 6 and Acts 20, 1 Timothy 3, Titus 1, and 1 Peter 5. And so we're going to carry on with that list today and finish the list that Paul gives us. And so the first thing that we want to talk about is Paul talks about the apprenticeship of a leader. The Puritans called the family the little church. And Paul combines, I believe he takes that thought, and he says if a man cannot manage his family, how can he manage the church? How can he shepherd the church? And so he's making that connection. The family is like a little church. The family is where a man apprentices to be a leader in the church. And so if managing the church is far more like managing a family than managing a business. And so you can be very successful elsewhere in life and yet be lousy at managing your family. And so the family actually becomes a man's testing ground for whether he's fit to be a leader. And so Paul makes that qualification that a man must manage his family well. Now, being a church leader is a very unique thing. Imagine out in a secular position, you're applying for a position in the company, and most of their questions are about your children or your wife. We just don't see that out there. But when it comes to the church, Paul says he must manage his family well, which means that he's not an absentee father. He's actively involved in parenting his children. He doesn't leave everything to mom. He takes the lead in teaching his children. Deuteronomy in chapter 6 talks about that a man, he's supposed to, as he goes along the way, as he sits down, as he gets up in the evening, whatever you're doing, you're just to be naturally bringing in the teaching of spiritual things to your children. He doesn't leave everything up to mom. He gives that responsibility to the man. He leads through example as he goes along the way. And so literally, what the biblical definition of what a man is supposed to be doing is, he's trying to create copies of himself in his children. And so Paul's idea is here, look at the copies and you'll see what the reality is of the man. That's what you're to look at. You get a picture of the original. Paul goes on, not only does he manage his family, and these are really just repeats, put in a different way. His children obey him with proper respect. And children need to be taught obedience. They're not born obedient. They need to be taught this. They need to be taught respect. And yes, mom will be involved in that, but dad must take a leadership role in this. And because she's with them more than he is, more of it will fall on her. But he still must be the leader in this. He's the authority that needs to teach them, and he enforces this. Now here's a key. Look at how the children treat their mother, and you'll see how dad has been teaching them obedience and respect. Look at how they treat their mom, and you'll see what kind of role dad has been playing. But you know, there's a reverse, a flip side to this. It's not just the children who are to be respectful. Dad is to lead in a way that respects the children. Ephesians 6:4 says, "Fathers, do not exasperate your children. Instead, bring them up in the training and instruction of the Lord." So he's saying, as you teach them obedience and respect, do not exasperate them. And so how you enforce discipline is so important. Now look at this. How he enforces discipline with his children will be how he leads the church. And if he exasperates his children, he will exasperate the church as he leads them. The next thing Paul says is, children must believe. And many have struggled with this one, because whether a child believes or not is ultimately not in the parent's control. Yes, you have a huge impact in this, whether they believe or not, but ultimately the decision to believe or not to believe is the child's decision alone. And a child can have great parents and yet choose not to believe. Years ago, I knew a pastor couple who had an unbelieving daughter, and they were great parents. All the rest of their children believed. But the one day he told me, he said, "This was one of our greatest heartaches. When that daughter was barely talking, she was already saying, 'I do not want Jesus.'" And he said, "We did everything we could think of. And we prayed. And we taught. And all they had a large family, and all the rest of their children came through believing. Now, should they quit being church leaders?" You know, many today believe that this is actually a wrong translation of the original word. The word here can be translated in two ways. It's a Greek word that has two meanings, and what you have to do is you decide the meaning by the context. We have a lot of that in English. And so when you look at the context, the word can be translated as believe or as being faithful. And when you look at the context, it's not talking about belief at all. The whole context around this word is rather talking about a child's behavior. And it's talking about, does the father teach obedience and respect and those kind of things? And so there are many today that believe that a better translation is, he's a man whose children are faithful in context to their behavior. They're faithful to how he has taught them. Now I want to go back to that pastor couple. All their children believers. One daughter that just throughout life, still today, she does not believe. Yet she was always faithful to what they had taught her in regards to behavior. She was an obedient, respectful child. And today, from a worldly perspective, a very good person. Perhaps a better translation is, are they faithful to what Dad has been teaching them? He just goes on. It's really saying the same thing again there, to live orderly lives. There's a theme that runs throughout Scripture. The church is a family, and the leader is leading a family. And so really, the family is the apprenticeship for a man to lead the church. How he leads his own family is how he's going to lead the church. And so when you want a leader for the church, look for a man who leads his family well. And Paul's question is, if he cannot lead his family well, how can he lead the church well? Now, I want to put in here what this is not. This is not about your leader's children walking around with halos on their heads. This is not about perfect children. And too often, churches have expected perfection of their leader's children, and they've made impossible demands on them, and they've been often critical of them and their behavior. And the parents feel this pressure, and they can add that pressure to their children. And the result often has been is that the children rebel because of this pressure. And so the result actually is the church, in putting unrealistic expectations on their leader's children, actually are part of the cause of them rebelling. You're actually working against what the parents are trying to do. And so as church people, we need to be so careful in that. So this I want to say, the children of your leaders are normal children. Proverbs 22:15 says, foolishness is bound up in the heart of a child. So Paul here is not talking about normal childish misbehavior or occasional disobedience. It's normal that children will misbehave. I know I was normal growing up. Now, who can here claim to be spanked by their pastor? Other than my kids. Frank, you had your hands? Was that real? He's not putting it back up. Who can claim to have stopped their pastor's sermon? And I got spanked by my mom for that one. Well, you know, maybe I'm not normal, because no one else is claiming this. Well, the issue isn't that children are normal and will misbehave. That's not what Paul's talking about. The issue is, what is Dad doing about it, and how is he leading his family? He's actually not talking about the kids and their behavior. He's talking about Dad and how he leads. Now, there's a lot of other questions that come around this one. What about adult children? And so the adult children have gone off, and they are into all sorts of stuff they shouldn't, and so on. The Bible doesn't answer every situation on this. Adult children can go astray after leaving home. A man may have come to faith after his children have grown, and he's become a faithful man. He fits all the qualifications, other than his adult children never grew up being taught. He missed that opportunity. You may have a man that he actually began walking. He was a Christian during those years, but he actually began walking with Christ after his children have grown. And so he didn't lead when they're young, and he has that regret. It's too late to manage them. But now he's faithfully walking with God. Most people would look at this. The Bible doesn't answer all those questions. And they would say, look at the now. What is he doing now with his family? Does he lead them spiritually? Maybe just his wife left at home. Does he pray with her? Does he study with her, meet her needs? Does he show her the love and concern that he should towards her? Is he family-centered in his leadership? Or does he just simply leave a leadership vacuum at home? And so that's what most would say. Look at the now. Where is he now in these things? Paul moves on from the children to the wife. And one of the leader's qualifications is his wife. And you might be saying, hey, that's not fair. As a woman, I didn't sign up for that. Yet there's wisdom in this because nothing will impact his leadership more for good or for bad than his wife. And just like with children, often churches have put unrealistic expectations upon the wife of a leader, especially a pastor's wife. And there's the story of a pastor's wife who had experienced a lot of negative expectations. And when they went to a new church, at the first meeting of the ladies in the new church, she had them all write out their expectations for her, what she should be expected to do, what she should wear, what she should sound like, how should she respond to their demands, how should she be expected to be involved. And on she went with all these kind of things. And so they wrote out all their expectations, and then she had a canister at the front, and without reading them, she put them into the canister and threw a match in there and burnt them all up. Well, there was a woman that was struggling with the expectations. You know, the Bible doesn't put any of those kind of expectations on the wives of the leaders. The churches often so do. But the Bible does have expectations of his wife. And here's what it gives. She is to be a woman who is worthy of respect. Dignified. She's a woman who controls her tongue. She doesn't slander. She's not a malicious talker. She doesn't speak negatively about people. She doesn't put people down. She's not critical or harsh. She's not a gossip. But rather, we could put the opposite here. Paul puts the negative. Ephesians puts the opposite here. Only speaks of what builds up. She's a positive influence when it comes to her tongue. She's temperate, which means sober-minded or self-controlled. She's trustworthy in everything. She's faithful. When she commits, she follows through. She's trustworthy in matters of confidentiality. Never, ever elect a man to leadership whose wife is a gossip, because she will become privy to knowledge that needs to be confidential. And so that's a key one. I like the way the Message puts it. He says, no exceptions in 1 Timothy 3:11. No exceptions are to be made for women. The same qualifications, serious, dependable, not sharp-tongued. And so just you have all these character qualities for the man. You have the same character qualities for the woman, for the wife. The difference is it doesn't put all these expectations of leadership and so on. She's free to be what God has made her to be. First Timothy 4:12. Talking to Timothy as a leader, says, set the example for believers in speech, in life, in love, in faith, and in purity. Really, all of us should be following that verse. We're all to seek to set an example in life, love, faith, and purity. And so too, the wife of a leader. And so in this way, she too is a test of his leadership. And he greatly impacts what kind of woman she is, and she greatly impacts what kind of man he is. So you really need to look at this. And so when you look at your leaders, potential leaders, does he show her respect and love and concern? Does he lead her spiritually? Does he give her wise counsel when she needs it? Look at how he treats his wife. It's so important. Many, many years ago, a woman saw her pastor come running out of the house, his wife ahead of him. And as he caught up to her, he kicked her. And she told me, you know, that day, it totally ended his ministry in my life. I lost all respect for him. You know, that's the extreme example. But look at how a man treats his wife before you choose him as a leader. Then Paul moves into the skills of a leader. He's to be a man of the word. In Acts chapter 6, as you had other practical needs were happening in the church, the apostle said, go and choose other men to lead that, because our job is to give our attention to prayer and the ministry of the word. Now, why is he to be a man of the word? Well, you come to the next skill. He's apt to teach, is the way the King James puts it, able to teach. Elders, 1 Timothy 5:17, the elders who direct the affairs of the church well are worthy of double honor, especially those whose work is preaching and teaching. And so he has to have that knowledge of the word where he can take and use it to teach others. This doesn't mean that he has the gift of teaching or preaching. He doesn't have to have that. In fact, 1 Timothy 5:17 makes a distinction between the elders who are doing that as their gifting in the church and those who aren't. But even those who don't have the gifting, they need to have that knowledge so they can do it. And so he needs to be at least a man who studies the word. He knows the word to the extent that the word will guide him along with the other leaders as they make decisions for the church. He knows how to apply the word of God to the life of the church. He's able to use the word to encourage and instruct others. And this may be simply one-on-one. And so unable to teach, it might not be that he's up front teaching, but he has to at least be able to, on one-to-one, be able to use the word and teach others. He's able to use the word to also recognize false teaching and to refute the false teachers, Paul says, and to even to go beyond that, to be able to rebuke those who need rebuking when they're teaching false teaching. And so he needs to be a man that he's on that journey of knowing the word of God. He's reached the place where he can use the word to impact other people through the word. He's a man who's willing to be continuously on that journey, because we never learn enough. We always need to learn more. And so he's willing to increase his knowledge of the word and his skill in using it, because the word is foundational to all the other qualities that God is asking. Put a man into leadership who doesn't know the word, and he'll make decisions without the word. Simple as that. So the next thing is, he's to protect the church. He's to know the word. He must hold firmly, Paul says, to the trustworthy message as it has been taught, so that he can encourage others by sound doctrine and refute those who oppose it. And so part of his job as a leader of the church is to protect the church. And today, the North American church is rife with false teachings. And many people don't even recognize them as false teaching. He's to be a man of the word because he must oversee the church. Titus 1:7 says, since an overseer is entrusted with God's work, he must, and I'm going to skip some of the things he put in between, he must hold firmly to the trustworthy message that's been taught, so that he can encourage others by sound doctrine and refute those who oppose it. And so his job is to oversee. And because he's an overseer, it says he must know the word so that he can use it. So besides being a man of the word, he's to be a man who cares for people. And it talks, Paul talks of being a man of prayer. He also talks of being praying for the sick in James 5. Galatians 6 talks of him being able to encourage and bear the burdens as people are struggling, coming alongside and bear their burden. And Titus 1:4 talks of him being a man who shows hospitality. You know, when it comes to hospitality, some leaders rely on their wives fulfilling this one because they think that if she prepares a meal and they invite someone in, that he's fulfilling this. And that kind of hospitality is good and is very important. But what this hospitality means here is to love strangers. He is a man who is welcoming to newcomers. He's the man that when he sees a newcomer walking into a church, he goes up and he introduces himself. And he makes that person welcome and he includes them. He doesn't just welcome on Sunday morning, he includes them into the life of the church. He makes them feel welcome at home. He seeks to take care of their needs. And so he's a man who cares for people. And so that comes to the end of Paul's qualifications for a leader. And he gives us one last instruction. When you're choosing your leaders, make sure that you test them according to these things that we've been talking about. First of all, Paul says, don't take a new convert as a leader. 1 Timothy 3:6, he must not be a recent convert, or he may become conceited and fall under the same judgment as the devil. And so what Paul is saying, he needs time to mature, he needs time to become settled into his faith. He needs to become sure in his walk. He needs time to find out his abilities. He needs to learn how to serve in humility. He needs to learn to discover his weaknesses and where God has made him strong. He needs time to pursue the renewing of his mind through the Word. One person said, a man can be drunk on the street one day and an evangelist the next day, but he cannot be a leader the next day. And there's so much truth to that. He needs time for God to humble him. As 1 Peter 5 says, God opposes the proud, but gives grace to the humble. Humble yourselves, therefore, under God's mighty hand, that he may lift you up. A new believer needs to go through that process of learning humility and allowing God to lift him up. And then Paul says, they need to be tested first, and if there's nothing against them, let them serve. And so as we move into choosing a new board here, this is something that we're asking you as a congregation to do. As you nominate your leaders, test them. Think through, take this list that I've given you, and as the nominations go out, those papers will go out, I'm going to have a sheet. It's just the list of all the qualifications. Take those qualifications and pray about the person that you're thinking about and examine them before you nominate them. Someone has summed it up this way. If you want just a quick way of testing them, choose fast leaders. F for faithful. Are they faithful? A for are they available? So often men have been chosen and they're not available. They're already way too busy. Are they spirit-filled? And are they teachable? Now, why is this so important? As months ago, as I taught on this, I'm going to use the title again that I used in one message there. As the leaders go, so goes the church. That's why it's so important. Worldly men equals a worldly church. Worldly men and the mission of the church gets lost. Go and make disciples gets lost. Worldly men will simply become caretakers of the church, not leaders of the church. Now, caretaking is important. It's an important function. But they will not lead spiritually and in vision as God has given it. There may be a lot of talk about vision, but little will get done. They will have very little vision, very little direction, and the same problems will appear month after month, year after year. Now, I want to just turn, as we close here, to you as men. As we're going to be nominating a board, I want you to look at yourselves and ask the question, is God putting it in my heart to be a leader in this church, to be on the board? Now, I'm not putting a guilt trip on you here this morning because God has not chosen all of you men to be our board member. And if God has chosen you to serve somewhere else, go and serve how God has designed you and be blessed in it and be happy in it. But you still need to ask that question, has God chosen me to be a leader in this church on the board? Now I want to flip that around. For some of you, you may be feeling that God has chosen you, but you're afraid. And that's natural. When God chose Saul and God anointed him through the prophet Samuel, it was very clear what God was saying to Saul, but Saul was afraid. And when it came time together, that Samuel called them all together and said, we're going to bring out the leader that God has chosen. He hadn't told them yet. And when Samuel said, where's Saul? They couldn't find him. He was hiding. He went and hid in the baggage. He was afraid of it. You know, and fear keeps us often from choosing this position. And if God is touching you on your heart that you're to be a leader, I encourage you, don't let fear hold you back. Because if God is called, God will enable. I'm going to pray a prayer here at the end. And it's a prayer that all of us as men, we can pray. And so I'll pray it slowly. I'll just pause between each sentence. And if you're willing to pray the prayer as a man, I'd like you to just pray it with me. So let's bow together. Father, I pray that you would make me faithful, a faithful and patient leader in my home. I pray that you would help me show my children that I love them in both tough and tender ways. I pray that I would display the gospel in the way that I love, lead, and care for my children. I pray that I'd have a deeper understanding of what it means that God is my Father, so that I can better imitate Him. I pray that God would fill my heart with the desire for ministry as He has given me to do. I pray that God would fill my heart with a hunger for His Word. I pray that God would enable me to use His Word to minister to others. And lastly, I pray that God would flood my heart with love for others. Amen.